Commander Eason, Real 4. We're talking about your time with HMS Enterprise, based at Colombo. One thing I forgot to mention was food on board ship. What sort of food were you served up with in the gun room?
Oh, pretty good. Yes. Yes, good. No doubt about it.
What would you get? You remember? Or...
Well, I think you would have a sort of, you know, bacon and egg type breakfast, coffee. Probably have a three course lunch and supper, soup, main course, and pudding of some sort, I think, on most days. Really, very good. I think food on board generally was good.
And you said you didn't have a lot to do with the sailors, but how did you get on with the sailors? I mean,
absolutely no problem. I didn't see as much of them in their mess decks as perhaps some of the other midshipmen did. The others would have been. Would have had sort of numbers of sailors whom they were in charge of. They were called divisional officers, or at least they would have been attached to a divisional officer who had the whole division of sailors. I think I probably did a little bit of that, but not very much. Probably missed out a bit thereby, but I had no problems.
And do you remember any particular instance that happened while you were with the Enterprise?
Things got a bit serious when the Japanese entered the war, of course, and the fleet got much bigger. Suddenly there was a large fleet called the Eastern Fleet, numbering, it had about four battleships and two or three aircraft carriers and 12 cruisers. It was a really big fleet. We were just one of them. And in that time, the Japanese came through, past Singapore, into the Indian Ocean. They did a strike on Colombo, did a bit of damage.
Do you remember of that?
An air strike. No, we were right out. We were well out of it. The Eastern Fleet was together, but had been shrewdly withdrawn from where we must have known the Japs were making for. Because they had three or four big aircraft carriers, and we'd all been sunk. We were down at near the chain of islands below Ceylon, Maldives, where the naval base at Adu Atoll, and that's where we were based. But it was really reacting to what the Japanese were doing, largely. They sank the Hermes and the destroyer off Trincomalee, made a bit of a mess of Colombo. Then they obviously were coming after us. They should have come after us. And then they couldn't have helped but do a lot of damage. And on the night we thought we were going to meet them, we were all together, and ready to meet them, but they turned around that very night, which I think was fortunate. We spent all night up. I was up on the bridge and just directly below it, in what was called the plot. That's just drawing the sort of operational, drawing the situation on the chart as we knew it.
Well, tell us a bit about that. What was your role on the plot? I mean, could you describe that sort of bridge and plot setup?
Well, it was before the days when ships had operations rooms. And the operations room really was mainly the captain's brain. The very beginnings of this was what had been simply before what's called the chart house, where all the charts were kept. The navigation of the ship was based on. One or two navigational instruments were there. quite a big room, about a quarter of the size of this room. On a table would have been what's called a plotting sheet, marked out in latitude and longitude, and on it the ship's position, its track marked off in time. The ship might have been in a certain position at 12 o'clock, we marked 12 o'clock, and then you're on a certain course, marked off in time, corrected as new sights were taken, adjusted for all the course changes. It was a record of your track the whole time. Any information you had of other ships or other forces, enemy forces, would have been on that. So one was the pictorial record of what was of the whole scene of action out to an appropriate distance around the ship, a distance probably maybe 100 miles, something like that. And somebody had to look after that. We had no radar, so no radar ratings. I think it was just me. That was the germs of the huge system which then became known as Action Information. When radar information came into it, it became very important. And then it went on into a fully fledged operations room to where it is now, where everything happens.
So what happened next then? You'd had this near contact with the Japanese fleet.
Yes. We, just before that, we had escorted what turned out to be the last troop convoy ever to go to Singapore. It consisted of a large number, I think about at least 12 beautiful great ships, Monica, Bermuda, things like that, real big liners, all full of troops, which was assembled at Colombo. We were there, some ships purely Australian troops, and a few other ships, not the Eastern Fleet as a whole, escorted them into Singapore, because by then we had no conception that they were going to come right down and occupy the whole area. Otherwise, I dare say they would never have gone there in the first place. Took off to Singapore, where they berthed and disembarked their troops and came out, and we legged it back out through the Sunda Strait out into the Indian Ocean again. Saw one or two Japanese aircraft on the way as we came out. Didn't really know how bad it was going to get. Had no conception how bad it was going to get. Singapore would fall within a couple of days of time I'm describing. Indian Ocean rejoined the fleet. Now we saw no actual action after that. I can't go into all the strategies of the because I you know it's altogether too much. But the Enterprise was with the fleet. I know we went to Bombay a couple of times, went back across to the west side of the Indian Ocean. That pretty well finished my time in Enterprise. I left her then and came home.
Now, when would that be? When did you leave her? Do you know what month that was?
Well,
you joined around about February, March from the south.
Went right around the year. Was in her for, I think I was in her for 13 months, which would have taken me back to sort of early summer, about April, March, April, I think, of 41.
42. Yes,
42, that's right.
And how did you come to leave the ship? Was that just the normal state of affairs that a midshipman would... that's about right, was it?
Yes, we had a certain progression of essential training-based. We had to go back and do our sub-lieutenant's courses. They were all withdrawn from our ships. Those that survived, because there are terrifically heavy losses in the Mediterranean, all came back and did sub-lieutenant's courses.
What do you remember of the trip back?
Came back in a big ship called the Duchess of Richmond. We were all together. I remember hot salt water baths, manning machine gun posts on the upper deck. There's a kind of something to do with us. Otherwise, a much faster trip. She won the big P&O, I think P&O liners, Duchess of Richmond, and straight back home.
Round the Cape.
Sure it must have been, yes.
And so you get back?
Get back to join our... all. You were then sorted out amongst all the various training establishments. HMS Dryad for navigation, excellent for gunnery, Vernon for torpedoes, Mercury for signals, where we did a concentrated course, each one about something like 4 weeks long.
So you went to, therefore, to HMS Giant?
I went to I did these four in rotation.
Oh, you did one at each. So what order was it for you then?
I can't remember.
Tell us what they were.
HMS Excellent for gunnery.
And what did you learn there?
Largely big ship gunnery, fire control, up ladder, down ladder, deflection left and deflection right, all that kind of stuff. The inevitable parade ground and rather more advanced states, taking charge of a whole sort of company size parade ground full of sailors. That was fun. A bit more small arms drill. That, I think, is all I can really remember of that.
So that's the gunnery at HMS. What else?
HMS Mercury for what was then called signals. Which of course was, as it suggests, the organisation of radio communications. More practice on Morse code and semaphore and flashing Morse. Coding and ciphering.
How did you take to signalling?
I was always very good at semaphore and Morse code, because I'd been on the bridge so much of the Enterprise. See, it's second nature to me. I could read that better than most signalmen could. Yes, that caused no problem. A very sort of theoretical course that was. I think it was 3 or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. On to the torpedo place.
That's the Vernon.
Yes, it wasn't at the down in Portsmouth. It was at Rodine School of all places, where we were. Learned about torpedoes. How they work, and the tactics of firing torpedoes, theoretically, actually you can't squirt torpedoes around the place or in practice. Searchlights, electrics, as much as is required for ships of those days, just DC electrics. That was the torpedo side. Our HMS Dryad navigation, where it is now, top of Portsdown Hill, Southwick House.
Oh, where, sorry?
At Southwick House on Portsdown Hill, HMS Dryad.
In Portsmouth?
Above Portsmouth. It had just been taken over, the house had, called Southwick House, Southwick, because the dockyard was being heavily bombed and the navigation school there was no longer tenable. So they rapidly bought this place called, huge place called Southwick House in an enormous estate. Owner furious, still in residence, absolutely furious, couldn't do much about it. Navigation, lots of classroom work.
Did you not know all, I mean, from your experience,
I was quite well placed for it, yes, but you still had to do the exams, still plenty to get wrong. A lot of what we call fleet work, the manoeuvring of ships together, which is quite a little subject on its own. So there, passed out of that, it's probably the lot, isn't it? Navigation, signals, torpedo, gunnery. Exams at the end of each one, got gradings out of each exam upon which you were given seniority. Top grade, I think you've got quite a lot, about 4 months seniority, and went down to nothing for the bottom graders. I think I got top grade.
So when would this finish, this series of courses?
That finished in early 40, very late 1940 or early 43.
Very late 1942.
1942, yes, or early 43. Yeah. From arriving.
It took about 6 or 7 months altogether.
Took several months, yes. I think there were various other little things. Time fillers. I think I was sent to go and learn to fly tiger moths, to keep me occupied till they had a ship to send me to.
Learn tiger moths.
Yes, but down at Gosford Airfield, me and one other, were attached to a little squadron of tiger moths where they taught us to fly.
What did you think of that? That's an unusual.
You know, terrifying. That was the autumn. November. That was. It all fits in. That was November 42, a lot of fog around. I managed to go solo for about 4 hours, so it was worth doing.
And that was the end of your training. So the end of
my
subs
training.
The sub would be in December, would it?
Then, in early 43, I was sent out to America to be part of the joining crew of a ship under construction, HMS Calder.
Now, what do you remember of the voyage out?
In the Queen Elizabeth of those days, not terribly crowded.
Not the Queen Mary, then?
I think they were both running. I think it was Queen Elizabeth.
And what were conditions like on them?
Oh, well, the ship wasn't too full, they're being outward bound, as it were, to America. So it was perfectly comfortable, lots and lots of small cabins, took about 5 days, I imagine. Soon went by to New York. Number of sailors, about 100 or 150 sailors, half a dozen officers. A few days in New York, then to Boston.
This would be January or February? Or
this would be, no, this by then, it was getting on in the spring. It was getting on. The time after subs courses must have taken longer than I can describe, but I think we got to America in about June. June 43, where there was a vast pool of English sailors, officers and men, standing by to join this enormous construction program, which was then just getting into its stride. We were to go to Boston, to Hingham, Massachusetts, where the big Bethlehem Hingham shipyard was, and the Caller was under construction there.
And did you know what was happening? Did you know you were going to join the Calder at the time?
Yes, I did, but there was a great deal of churning around, of changing ships, the drafting of men on that scale, always a lot of changes take place. Ships might have been delayed, or this and that, but we got together. I think we all knew pretty well what we were destined for, and we only had a matter of maybe a couple of months before the ship was ready to commission.
Where were you staying in Boston or Hingham, just outside Boston?
The officers of the Calder were billeted together with a family, wife of a shipyard worker. Their name was Harrington.
What were the billets like? And how did you get on with the family?
Oh lovely. It was a very, very nice house. Typically American, nice slopy grassy lawn, trees, fairly open, a little bit colonial style house, charming family. Didn't see much of him because he was a shift worker. Mrs. Harrington was very nice. The nicest part, really, I suppose, really was his two daughters. We got on very well with them. Nancy Harrington and one other.
inhibiting you?
And a very American little boy called, inevitably, Butch. He was a mixed asset because he used to disturb our nice games.
And what were you actually doing while you were waiting?
It wasn't very long. It was only probably a couple of weeks, receiving stores and victuals and everything imaginable a ship carries, advising where you want it put, to some extent influencing the Americans in different arrangements between us and the USN. Sometimes this was fairly easy. Sometimes it's very difficult.
What kind of thing?
Particularly the storage of rum caused great consternation, unbelievable difficulties.
Why? What was the point of issue?
Having rum on board at all was barely comprehensible. When you come to speak to John Davidson, he had to cope with all that. Again, I was a little bit in the esoteric realms because I was once pounced upon as a navigating officer, inevitably, and I was quite busy in my own little realm.
What were you doing then?
Well, we very early on, we received the outfit of charts, English charts, which was enormous. And although they correct it up to date as far as they can, and the hydrographer did then and still does miracles in producing charts corrected at the point of issue, there's a great deal of correction to be done. And this is where really where Harold Fine comes in, because he was at the beginning was attached to me as a navigator's yeoman assistant, as it were, and he and I both corrected charts, which made my job much easier.
What did you think of it? I mean, we both know Harold Fine now, but what impression did Fine make on you at the time?
Oh, very, very easy to get on with, efficient, very efficient, very tremendously willing. He was very, very streetwise, and the greatest assistance to me.
Now, what about possibly just look at some of the other members? I mean, you mentioned Davidson. That's John Davidson, who was...
Yes.
First lieutenant. Well, what were your first impressions? We'll come to how you got on with him as well.
Yes.
What were your first impressions of Davidson?
Well, let me say first, we were slightly unusual compared with most of the other captain class figures in a higher proportion of regular RN officers compared with RNVR. There's nothing to do with comparison of their abilities, but we did in fact have a the executive officer, the first lieutenant, was John Davidson. He was RN down to his fingertips, and he very, very, very efficient. And we were all very fond of him.
He made a good impression straight away.
Oh yes, yeah. He was forceful and quite experienced, and was very good at dealing with the Yanks. I mean, he didn't stand any source when it came to try to be made to accept unsuitable stores and that kind of thing.
And what about, of course, the captain was Lieutenant Commander, I'm not sure of his first name, but his surname was White.
White, yes. A White.
What was he like?
Oh, nice. Typical liner, probably chief officer, I should think.
He was Royal Naval Reserve then, was he?
Yes, yes. Entirely up to the job, and universally liked. Great shame that he went sick quite early.
He was a pleasant man then.
Oh, yes.
Had Huckle, John Huckle, arrived as
John Huckle was there at the outset. He was a RNVR midshipman, a little bit younger than Harold and I even.
What was he like?
Tremendously keen. When it came to sort of inter officer relationships, he probably, I could say, keen to a fault, keen to the point of being bumptious, but by gosh, he knew his stuff, he made a most excellent anti-submarine control officer, got decorated for it.